This painting is by a well-known artist, although some of you may not, obviously not well-known if you've never heard of him, but he's kind of well-known because of this particular painting. And it's a painting called The Peaceable Kingdom. And this man was a Quaker called Edward Hicks. And he was painting in the 19th century. And it's a representation of one of the readings that we had earlier on. Actually, the reading that Grace read to us from the prophet Isaiah. Remember, we heard those words. The wolf will lie with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and the little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear, the young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young child will put its hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And so Edward Hicks, the painter, who's known as a primitivist artist, composed this picture, The Peaceable Kingdom. And we see some of the characters from that reading. There's the child taming the lion, and there's the lamb and the goat and the cow. Now, what you might not know is that this painting, this scene, Edward Hicks was quite fascinated by it because he painted the scene over 100 times. And we still have at least 62 versions that are surviving, that sell for millions and millions of pounds. Here's another version. Same artist a few years later on. The one you had was one he did at the beginning. This was another one. And what's interesting is that a lot of these scenes look very similar in the 100 paintings. He obviously liked the picture. Here you go. Here we have the animals again. Slightly different. Strange looking lion here. And what's going on over here is a picture that Hicks often puts in his paintings, which is the 17th century Quaker William Penn arranging a treaty of peace with the American Indians. What was Hicks saying? Well, we may laugh, especially after the year that we've just had, but this was the vision that America was the New World. America, the founding of America, this peaceable kingdom, was the values that America was meant to represent, of peace, of Eden, a picture where people or animals were not tearing each other up, where people got along with each other, hence the treaty there. This is a picture of America. Here's another version of it. This isn't going to go on for 62 times, don't worry. Here's another version. Same picture again, here you go. That's the William Tate making peace with the indigenous population there. Interestingly, the pictures are slightly different as you go through Hicks's career. If you look closely here, the animals seem a little bit more restless. They seem less at peace. That lion looks as if he's about to do something a bit naughty. And what was happening in Hicks's life here is that there was great religious tension. And so he kind of paints that tension into the picture. Here's another one. Same idea again. Again, slightly different. There's a bear here. See that bear? That's not a very peaceable bear, is it? And this, a lot of art historians talk about this trunk here as being broken and that being significant in the painting. But then as Hicks got into his 60s, he had a new way of looking, a kind of a more peaceable way. Maybe he'd been made peace with himself. Apparently, he was a very angry man and he couldn't work out, he couldn't deal with his own anger. but maybe towards the end of his life he did. So here is the last version of the picture before he died. I bet some of you are thinking they all look exactly the same, but they're not, they are different. And here the animals are lying down, the children are walking away. Here we have the pact again between William Tate. The lion's half asleep by now, been painted too many times. Amazing. Now we might look at those paintings and say, well, that's, how quaint is that? The idea that someone would picture that scene of animals getting together. I mean, what kind of a world is it where children play with leopards and lions? What kind of a world is it where you have people making peace with each other? There's no walls dividing countries in that picture over there. And maybe we think, yes, Hicks was primitive. He had this vision of a world that can never be like this picture, can never be like the world of Isaiah, the prophet that we read from which these paintings originate. And yet before we think that we're so enlightened, before we think, well, we don't believe in these silly kinds of stories, don't we? We're going to watch something that says 200 years later, we still have these beliefs. We still have these hopes. Let's watch this film together. That's the John Lewis ad. If you think about it though, it's not that different from the picture that Hicks is drawing himself. Here's the problem that we have, that Christmas in some ways remains stubbornly religious. Stubbornly religious. In the year that we've had, with political upheaval, and still as we read about just today, the terrible situation in places like Syria, in Aleppo, John Lewis is, I suppose, trying to tell us, well, wouldn't it be great if we had that kind of world? A world where foxes do play with badgers and squirrels and hedgehogs. But we know, don't we, That's just as escapist as the picture that Hicks had. One of my favourite comedians is Frank Skinner. And on his podcast a few weeks ago, they were talking about the John Lewis ad, and it was kind of pouring cold water over it, because they realised that in the real world, this kind of thing doesn't happen. The little girl would wake up in the morning to find that the fox had completely destroyed the hedgehog, with its guts hanging all over the trampoline. And the kid would run out and slip, probably on the excrement of one of those animals. You see, in our world, in the reality of our world, those animals do not get along with each other. And yet we like the idea that it is like that, don't we? It's interesting. Did you notice the soundtrack to that advert? Randy Newman's famous song, One Day I'll Fly Away. What's interesting in that what's meant to be a very positive picture or a very optimistic picture, can't the animals and can't we all get along in such a terrible world? Can't we just have a great time together? Those words are quite melancholic, sad words. Maybe you didn't hear them. Let me read you one of the verses. I follow the night, can't stand the light. When will I begin my life again? One day I'll fly away, leave your love to yesterday. What more can your love do to me? When will love be through with me? Why live life from dream to dream and dread the day that dreaming never ends? You see, the John Lewis ad's very positive, but the soundtrack is saying, well, this kind of investment in a dream is a dream, because it's not the real world. You see, the brutal realities of man's inhumanity to man, woman's inhumanity to woman, is not dismissed when that big Coca-Cola lorry comes along and hands out Coca-Cola. And Syrian airspace will not let Santa go through this Christmas. You see, if we take that advert and we show it to the war-torn places of the world, they're not going to stop fighting. But it is escapism, isn't it? There's something deep down in us that wants that kind of world. The world where animals do get along with each other, where we get along with each other, where our internal heart gets along with each other, and we understand ourselves. Here's another example. Maybe some of you have been watching David Attenborough's Planet Earth 2. It's been great. It's been, great. It's been watching all these amazing animals in the world. Did you know, though, that numerous viewers have complained, even in the last few weeks, because some of the scenes were deemed to be too brutal, especially those of mating snow leopards, which were described as rape. Now, one of the funny things about that, and David Attenborough should know of all people, that to Darwin and the survival of the fittest, how can we be offended by any of these things? We're just being confronted by the truth of nature, red in tooth and claw. It's simply the passing on of the selfish gene. How can we be morally outraged by it? It's just life. These things happen. However, whilst it might be inconsistent with that kind of way of viewing the world, the outrage we instinctively feel at the unfairness and brutality of the natural world, we do feel it. Because, as I as a Christian believe, that human beings are not mere mammals, but we were created in God's image to enjoy his good creation and to live under his just rule. And what the John Lewis advert shows, what our outrage at the brutality of nature shows, is an inexplicable moral sense of justice and fairness that we have as human beings. We automatically side with the prey rather than the predator. We dislike the bloodshed and the violence. We long for a better world where might does not make right and where there can be peaceful coexistence. It's interesting that's been pointed out. The BBC pointed out that in the final broadcast, the BBC confirmed that the cameraman men had collected every disorientated baby hawksbill turtle that had seen and been filmed and put them back in the sea. It was an act of altruism. They shouldn't have done anything. They should have been just left to die. But these people didn't want to work, just watch natural selection at work, because they're human beings. You see, here's the thing. That escapism that we feel in the John Lewis adverts, or that sense of humanity that we feel watching Planet Earth 2, says something about us as human beings. And it makes us think that that picture that Hicks painted so many times as something that's very similar to what we feel today. Many of us long for a better world. And this is a year where we haven't particularly seen a better world, we've seen a worse world. The problem is escapism is just that. It is escapism. It is fantasy. Anyone with children will know that if you have one of those trampolines, even if the animals don't get on it, the kids will. And there'll be aches and pains and arguments, broken bones, fights. You see, in the real world, that's what we have to get to grips with. And so we can't escape. You can't escape. You can't escape from yourself. All the times when you're trying to understand yourself and you're saying, why do I get angry at these things? Why can't I be nice to that person? We know maybe that we should be, but we know that we can't. Something's gone wrong. And so we return back to that picture in Isaiah. Remember we heard, saw it read out, the wolf will live with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, the little child will lead and the cow will feed with the bear. It's a picture of how the world originally was, but restored now. It's a vision that Isaiah had of the future. An amazing vision. Look at some of the features. The idea that those animals that live to hate each other and kill each other and devour each other, they'll get on with one another. The child, the most defenseless of human beings, will be able to live with the most dangerous of creatures. And no one will harm each other, and no one will destroy each other. What an amazing picture. But you might think, well, that's no more realistic than the John Lewis ad. That's no more realistic than Hicks's painting. And yet as Christians, we believe that this is a picture that is true, that is based on reality. And it's based on reality because some of the things that we've been singing about and reading about this evening. Notice how Grace read the first part of that particular reading. You see, that vision of Eden restored, of a glorious world, a peaceable kingdom, comes about by this amazing story. And it starts with this idea of a shoot. Oh, gone too far. Can we go back one, Brian? Two on.
there we go. Sorry, it's my fault, probably.
That shoot. It was a time in Israel's history where it was a very dark time, and yet, out of that dark time comes this idea of a shoot that will bear fruit. And Isaiah was saying that there's someone coming who God will be with him, the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. And he will be an amazing judge, not just by what he sees and hears. Literally, in the Hebrew, the translation is that this judge, this perfect judge that Isaiah was looking forward to, is not just going to judge by outward appearance or by what he hears. Literally, and you may laugh at this, it's by his sense of smell. That's what the phrase, he will delight in the fear of the Lord. Literally, this judge can smell out fear. Can get to the heart of what's going on with a human person. And he will be an amazing judge, a righteous judge. A judge who will bring justice, will give decisions for the poor on the earth. And there will be judgment. Sometimes we don't like the idea of judgment, but in a world of inequality, we long for judgment. We long for justice. And this person coming, this shoot, will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. And maybe you don't realise tonight that the readings that we've been hearing and the songs that we've been singing all point to that person predicted hundreds of years earlier. Is the historical person of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, who has changed our culture, who millions and millions of people worship as that king. And that's not just escapism, because the gospel accounts that we heard this evening remind us that the baby Jesus inhabited a world as gritty and gloomy as ours. He was born to an unwed mother in unsuitable accommodation and lived his earliest years as a refugee. He was threatened by a rival king who committed genocide. Jesus' earliest memories would have been of Egypt, where his parents fled to escape the butchery. You see, we may want to escape from the reality of the world and believe in a John Lewis ad and believe, isn't it like that? But we know that it's not. But here's the amazing truth about Christmas, is that we can't escape, and yet the living God of the universe has come down to us, to help us, to save us, to rescue us from ourselves, to restore the damaged relationship of our rebellion against him, to deal with the problem of things that have gone wrong, not just between us as human beings, not just between us and creation, but a broken relationship with the one who made us. That's the crazy thing that Sandra was reading in John. God comes down to those who will reject him and despise him and crucify him. And yet God is the one who created them all and gave them life and breath and everything. And that's the astonishing news of Christmas, that God himself became one of us. And maybe you've heard this story before. And maybe you think, yeah, I'd love to believe it's true, but how can we believe things like that today? Please think about what's happened this year. Think about the things that we've put our faith in this year. Is it so crazy to believe? At its heart, the Christmas message is that in order to restore us to a world which is at peace with God and with itself, the Creator came in and experienced the worst of our broken world, Far from retreat from reality, Christmas offers the prospect of being able to face the harshest of realities, but with hope. God is not distant from our pain. And I know that some of you here, you probably won't admit it, but you don't like Christmas. You hate Christmas. But God has entered into our world. And he's experienced the grittiness of it and borne it. And so we have an amazing picture of the reconciliation of old hostilities. And the good news of Jesus Christ is that he's able to deal with problems outside in the world and problems within, the problem with our own heart. Maybe some of you this evening are struggling with guilt or shame. And as we read earlier on, it was read out, Jesus saves people from their sins, the forgiveness of sins. Maybe the things that you've been struggling with, and I'm here to tell you tonight that you can be forgiven by the God who created you. If you come to him. You see, we have this amazing picture of justice and righteousness. And there has to be that admission that something has gone wrong. But realizing that Jesus is really the saviour of the world. And it's not airy-fairy, pie in the sky. That's why I've stressed to you tonight the historical nature of these accounts. I've stressed them. This is the opposite of fantasy. This is the opposite of John Lewis. That picture of Christmas. This is reality. This is how it was 2,000 years ago. And so tonight you can experience forgiveness, joy, and peace. And one day, as Christians believe, we do believe that Jesus will come again, and that picture that we see will truly be seen, where there will be complete peace. An amazing, peaceable kingdom. But until then, we have that peace in our hearts, and it lives in different places, especially within God's church, where people from all different backgrounds and groups that hate each other have been able to come together. That's the weird thing. Maybe you haven't been in a church here for a long time. Maybe you've never stepped into a church before. But the church is not the building. The church is the people. And we know our community here at East Finchley, we have people who normally probably wouldn't ever get along with each other. People from different backgrounds and different generations and different characters. But because of our belief in who Jesus is, we have peace with one another. And we have peace with God. So two things that I want you to think about tonight. Firstly, you can't escape. Christmas is coming. And we have to deal with the reality of our world. Secondly, though, we need to get real. And we get real by acknowledging that something has gone wrong. And yet the recognition that there is someone, Jesus Christ, who has come into the world to save the world. If we put our faith and trust in him this evening. It's very easy to do. Please come and see me afterwards if you want to know more about what being a Christian is all about. We're going to sing our final hymn together.